Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening, we'll talk about Gambia, challenge to President Yahya Jammeh's 20-year rule. And with us tonight is Jeffrey Smith. He's international consultant and executive director at the Vanguard Africa Movement. He joins us from the nation's capital here in D.C. Good afternoon, Jeffrey.
Good afternoon, Douglas. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also joining us is Dr. Amadou Scathrad Jane. He's director of Coalition for Change in Gambia. He joins us by phone from Atlanta. Good afternoon, Mr. Amadou.
Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. We also have Saine Marane. He's a Gambian journalist based in West Africa. I believe he's joining us from Dakar, Senegal. Good evening. Good evening, Marane.
Marana, thank you very much. Good evening from Dakar, Senegal.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, as I said, tonight we're going to talk about the Gambia and what challenges that the president there is facing after his 20-year rule. Let me begin with you there in Dakar. What are you hearing across the border in Gambia? How is the situation like now?
Thank you very much. The situation back home as we speak is currently tense. Today, the opposition leader who was arrested following a peaceful protest he did along with his party members appear in court today. A ruling was done on his bail application that was filed earlier by a team of defense counsel led by one veteran lawyer, Antumana Gay. So the Nigerian judge who is presiding over the case denied all the 19 accused persons, including the party leader of the United Democratic Party. So there was a rare protest also outside the court premises today. This protest is headed by the women wing of the United Democratic Party. The party leader, the deputy party leader, happened to be a female who spearheaded this protest outside the court premises today. So now it's a daily occurrence. Anytime lawyer Usainu Dabo is brought to the court, you will see protests that are very rare in the history of the Gambia. I am starting a panel with Dr. Scott Rejane, who was convicted for distributing T-shirts and banner with increasing end to dictatorship. But today, we have seen banners more wild than that of Dr. Scott Rejane, and it's unbelievable. So the situation back home now is that the fear factor that have been holding the Gambian for the past 20 years is going off down the lane. So I think Banjul is not normal at the moment because UDP is not relenting in their drive to see that their party leader, who has been arbitrarily arrested, denied bail, and then and sent into confinement without, in fact, without visitation. So this is something that is currently happening in Banjul. Hearing now is extended to May 5th. Where the lawyers again will challenge the court ruling on the bail application. Today at the court, they challenge the constitutionality of why the Nigerian judge refused them bail, arguing that the charges preferred against them are all bailable. So the situation back home is something that is very worrisome. And then in Dakar here, media is talking a lot about the Gambian issue. So basically, that is what is happening currently back in Banjul.
I see. Jeffrey, I just had a colleague there mention that some people may have given up fear. Jammeh, as you know, once infamously said that he would rule for 1 billion years. Are you surprised that people now are rising up to protest his rule?
Yes. It's been a very interesting few weeks, but to be sure, tensions in the Gambia have been slowly building for years. This has to do for a number of reasons, not least because of the repressive security environment that prevails in the country, as well as widespread corruption. There are chronic food shortages, and the Gambia and the Jammeh government has terribly mismanaged the economy. What many people don't know is Gambia ranks dead last in all of West Africa in terms of GDP per capita, the only country to experience such a decline since 1994. And when we've seen people in Banjul and throughout Gambia head to the streets to exercise their constitutional right to free assembly, to public protest, oftentimes security forces will open fire using live ammunition, which they did several weeks ago on April 16th. Many instances of people being detained incommunicado past the 72-hour constitutional limit, people dying in detention, which happened several weeks ago, including Solo Sandeng, who is a prominent youth leader of Gambia's main opposition party. So I don't think it can be overstated enough the incredible amounts of courage and bravery that these ordinary Gambians have shown on a repeated day-to-day basis since April 14th. Of this year. The Gambian security forces operate with absolute impunity. There's actually a law on the books in Gambia called the Indemnity Act, which gives, which essentially provides immunity for security forces who open fire and happen to kill people in the streets, because essentially Yahya Jammeh is running a military government, and any semblance of public criticism can be deemed an unlawful assembly, and therefore the police, the military, the security forces are given immunity. They can't be charged for their crimes. So really, again, I think the main point here, and what we've seen over and over again, as Sandy pointed to, are women being at the forefront of these protests, bringing out their kitchen spoons or calabashes, what has become known as the Kalama Revolution. Women bringing out brooms, you know, sweeping out dictatorship is what they're chanting today. So it's really been tremendous to watch, and really, really quite inspiring, given the wholly repressive and absolute use of violence that is used with impunity over the years, for the past 22 years, in fact, under Yahya Jammeh in Gambia.
I see. Dr. Amadou, the death of Solo Sandeng, is that what sparked off this current protest? How common or how unusual is this death in prison or police cells?
Well, it's very unfortunate. The mortality rate in prison in the Gambia is very high indeed. But much more troubling is the number of people who die as a result of torture in the hands of our security forces and the notorious National Intelligence Agency. We had reported on this for quite a while, provided information to UN agencies and human rights organizations that there is widespread torture in the Gambia, particularly torture of folks who are under detention, people who are not even charged with any criminal acts, people who simply exercise their fundamental rights. And Solo Sandeng's death sparked this current round of protests, but it also highlights the whole range of abuses under Jammeh's regime. You look at the judiciary there, you have mercenary judges who simply carry out the directives of Yahya Jammeh. If he says no bail, it means no bail. They would find some rationale to keep Usainu Dabo and the others in prison. And even if the judge says that conditions in the prison have to change, if they complain about not having access to family members, to food and medical care, the judge may go through the motions and you know, make a pronouncement, but it, nothing comes out of it. There have been complaints that they're not being fed properly, they're not being given proper medical care. These are things that are very symptomatic of the prison system. Very poor diet, torture, very high mortality rate, and so on. But the events are also significant in that, as Feni Marena mentioned, I got the life sentence simply for distributing 100 T-shirts with the inscription, "End Dictatorship Now." But today we've seen hundreds of people protesting in the middle of Banjul at the High Court with banners saying the same thing, chanting and fitting the security forces. So it may have come very late, but we have seen that the fear that has enabled Jammeh to remain in power for 22 years and to act with impunity is gradually eroding, and I don't see this changing anytime soon. So it's very likely that the people will come out, continue to protest, exercise their rights, regardless of threats coming from the regime.
I see. Sani Maren, tell us, what are you getting from the government itself, Jamaica government? Do you feel there's a sense of concern or panic, or that it's business as usual?
No, since this revolution, which is very rare in the Gambia, started some 3 weeks ago, only statement that comes from the government is from the Minister of Information, who happened to be a former journalist whom I also worked with. His newspaper was shut down 2 times because of the draconian media laws we find ourselves in the country. And now he's the guy who is serving as the spin doctor of the regime. He came openly and tell the press that lawyer Dabo has violated the Public Order Act, where he failed to secure a permit to hold a peaceful rally. And constitutionally in the Gambia, it's required that you can peacefully protest without seeking permit. That if we are not going to use any PA system, and in this case there was no PA system that was used by these peaceful protesters. So he said Dabo violated that, and then the matter is currently in court and he cannot talk about it. But what is currently making a lot of ordinary Gambians angry about the entire situation is that 22 years we have lived in complete fear, 22 years we have lived in a complete mystery. So now they are saying enough is enough. We are going to protest peacefully. You either give us permit or not, it's our right to do it. So normally the security forces, which have been very notorious in cracking down on peaceful protesters, have to realize that they are working for a guy who has total disregard for human rights. So the situation now is like is something that's a bit encouraging, because people are now coming out face-to-face with these mass paramilitary agents and then, you know, talking about the regime openly, how they want the regime to go. So basically, the government is not talking about this. What is clear is that we have one of the weak judicial bodies in the country. The presiding judge in Dabo case is a Nigerian judge who, in fact, has not been practicing back home in Nigeria. So these are the kind of people he brought into the judiciary. The chief prosecutor is also a Nigerian. So that is why Gambians like me, who have covered the trials for quite a long time now, are of the view that, you know, justice will not be served in this case. Looking at the charges which are available, the judge denied them based on the fact that the investigation into the matter are ongoing. And these are flimsy excuses we have been hearing when certain trials are going. And these are political motivated trials. And we know that there is not going to be any fair play. There's not going to be any justice in this case. So basically, the UDP is telling people that we are going all out to demand our constitutional rights. So this has passed a UDP case. This is a national crisis, and it is responsibility of each and every Gambian to take ownership of it. So basically, and the international community also should not sit. I know Jeffrey have been very good in advocating for the international pressure. Yes, we appreciate the international pressure, but we want to move from commitment to action. Let the international community tell Jammeh that, hey, look, enough is enough, and then now your own people are rising against you. It's better for you to step down. So I think the international community owe it a lot to the Gambian. Gambia is not an isolated country. Jammeh wanted to make it isolated. But we wanted to tell the international community not to leave us alone, because their role is very critical to restore democracy, good governance, and rule of law in that teeny West African state of Banjul. So basically, the situation back home is very there. Anything can happen.
I see.
Security is tightened. Looking at the border impasse with Senegal. So there are a lot of implications for Jammeh if he failed to relinquish power this time around, Mr. Fatou.
I see. Amadou, I wanted some clarification. He just mentioned the judge was a Nigerian, so was the prosecutor. Is this common practice in Gambia?
Yes, it is common. In fact, some Gambian magistrates, there's a case where just 2 days ago, a Gambian magistrate who discharged, took a decision that Yami did not like, and the NIA picked him up. That's just 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. So the judiciary is packed with the Nigerians who are only loyal to Yahya Jammeh. He is a dictator in true form. He's the only one who hires and fires judges, ministers, village councillors, etc. Each and every level of government is firmly controlled by Yahya Jammeh. We do not have, you know, checks and balances and stuff like that. So they function at Jammeh's will. He fires them at will, and therefore, as Marina mentioned, he covered a lot of cases, including mine, where he was detained at some point. And that is the problem in the Gambia. Jammeh is in total control of the judiciary.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America series here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the Gambia, where the challenge to President Yahya Jammeh's 20-year rule is ongoing. Our panelists are Jeffrey Smith, international consultant and executive director of the Vanguard Africa Movement, Dr. Amadou Skatred Jane, director of Coalition for Change Gambia, and Sine Marane, a Gambian journalist based in West Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Washington. Jeffrey, we've just heard how the situation is a bit dire in Gambia. It's a poor, small country. What do you think international community need to do to push along, to help the people who are protesting and demanding for their rights?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think before I pivot to that, two really important points that you were just discussing, particularly on the topic of the media. If you read government media, their newspapers or their online outlets, you're not going to see one story about the protests that have been happening over the past several weeks, which is, you know, the most public, most profound, most sustained act of public defiance against the Jammeh regime since he came to power by military coup in 1994. You won't see a mention of it. There'll be hardly any mention of it in the independent media, namely because there is no independent media in Gambia. Mm-hmm. Most independent journalists are either in jail, they're living in exile, or they've been killed, or they've been tortured at the hands of the National Intelligence Agency and Jammeh's henchmen in Banjul. If you look, for instance, at Freedom House's annual Freedom of the Press survey, which was released last year, Gambia actually had the highest drop-off in all of Africa last year. They had the most significant decline in terms of press freedom on the entire continent. And this is a continent that includes Burundi, and we see what's happening there, a continent that includes Somalia, and we see the peril that journalists face there. So Gambia is right up there amongst the worst of the absolute worst. Secondly, on the issue of mercenary judges, you know, this has become a common tactic used not only by Jammeh, but by autocrats across the continent, particularly in small, very isolated, highly repressive countries. If you look at Swaziland, for instance, in southern Africa, King Mswati, who's the last absolute monarch in Africa, often employs mercenary judges from other countries who can't get a job in their own country, so they bring them on in their own to do their own bidding. And just on the point of Gambia, the former Supreme Court justice was a Pakistani judge who actually left his position, I believe it was a year and a half to 2 years ago, because of undue interference by the executive in the court. So this is a long established history in the Gambia in terms of lack of judicial independence. And on the issue of the international community, I think, you know, what has been very important so far, and the reason why I think you're seeing Jammeh's security forces in comparison, relatively to years past, be rather subdued. You know, you're not seeing the amount of overt physical violence that we've seen in the past. You're not seeing the amount of live ammunition that we've seen used in the past, where, you know, in years past, and there are many instances in which the police and the security forces have used live ammunition, killing people in broad daylight. You're not seeing that to the extent this time around, because for the first time in Gambia's history, the world is actually watching. The world is actually paying attention. And there are reasons for that. I recently wrote on this, and there are four primary reasons for this, why the world is actually paying attention now, the first of which is because a lot of international attention was garnered back in September of 2014 when Jammeh signed, a highly draconian anti-gay law as part of revisions to the country's criminal code. Secondly, you had the failed attempted coup in December 2014, which also got a lot of interest around the country. And third, which a lot of people aren't talking about, but is very important, is the ongoing refugee and migrant crisis. Gambia, throughout 2015, was in the top 10 of all nationalities crossing the Mediterranean. This is a country of less than 2 million people. And through the first half of 2015, they were fifth in terms of total numbers of people crossing the Mediterranean. They were only behind Nigeria, which has 100 times more the population of Gambia, Syria, Eritrea, and Mali, which is just staggering statistics and really gives you a broad, stunning overview of the tragic situation that ordinary Gambians are facing. And fourth, and perhaps most significant pertaining to events over the last week, international attention has been focused because you're really starting to see Gambia's disparate and notoriously fractured political opposition come together and coalesce in certain key areas. And really, you've heard Saini and both Dr. Jammeh talk about this. The United Democratic Party and Hussein Darbo have really come to the forefront as an opposition political force to be reckoned with in the Gambia, which is very important, particularly given that elections are upcoming this December in Gambia.
I see. Amadou, further to that point of the, especially of the forces, they have been known to be brutal, as most of you have mentioned. Do you think they might be seeing the writing on the wall? Maybe this time they could flip and go on the side of the people?
Well, there's a great deal of international attention being focused on the Gambia, and Jammeh has found out that brute force may not work this time. So what they're doing, especially around the courts, is to have a process whereby the protests would simply fade and the people would lose interest. One thing is to have the court cases adjourned several times, and then to make traveling to the capital very difficult, a lot of checkpoints, and hoping that interest would fade rather than just simply going out to shoot as they started and as they normally do. What the economic problems that the country is facing is also a key issue. Jammeh is finding it difficult to reward his loyalists as he did in the past, and Senegal has put a squeeze on the country with the border crisis that's going on. We are not counting on the security forces to do anything, but one thing is certain. The protests will continue, and regardless of what kinds of delay tactics the regime uses, fear is eroding rapidly, and there will be concerted efforts to try to exercise our fundamental rights and ultimately end dictatorship in the country. Before this series of events, the calls were for electoral reform. Now no one is talking about electoral reforms. With the killings, the torture, the disappearances, the agenda is only one. There's only one item on the plate, ending dictatorship in the country. And no one is counting on the security forces to do it. It's people power that's going to galvanize change in the country.
I see. Let me go back to Dakar. How strong or how organized is the UDP party? Because like is common in most dictatorships, the opposition normally is weakened through the state infrastructure. How organized are they?
Thank you very much, Douglas, for that question. The United Democratic Party is one of the biggest, is the biggest and the leading opposition party in the country. And then they are the only political party within the opposition that pose a potential threat to the existence of the ruling party. So all those other political parties even joined together, UDP has the majority. So basically, UDP is one of those organized opposition parties in the country. They have a grassroots support in all the regions in the country. And also, since 1 year back, UDP has started what we call a grassroots tour. They made a caravan tour to the breadth and length of the country, talking to people in their households, talking to farmers in their farm. So they have approached they have used an approach to make sure that voters understand how crucial the 2016 election is open to the Gambians. We have other political parties like the like NRP, like GMC, but all these are small political parties. So the only strong, formidable political party in the country is United Democratic Party. That is why the regime is doing all it can to demoralize it, to disintegrate it. At least by doing that, the other parties will just be will not be a threat, because in previous election UDP pulled more votes than any of these political parties, including the opposition, joined together. So United Democratic Party is a very strong political party, and this protest is in fact making them stronger, because people think that when their leader and five of its executive members are arrested and detained, it will weaken party leadership. But no, a woman who is a deputy secretary general is leading the party now. We have seen that even those number of people that came out on the 14th and 16th April for the peaceful protest, the number now turning at the court is higher than that number of people that turn out for protest. So why people are saying the fear factor, which Dr. Jane alluded, it has already eroded. This party is ever determined from I have seen on the ground.
Okay.
Because women went with the calabash, and calabash have sociocultural importance in our society. And then that shows that, you know, they are fed up. And secondly, today we have seen they went with brooms. You know, in our local dialect, we call them fitarang. Fitarang means the broom you use to sweep. So they are saying they're going to sweep Jamme out. So it's very symbolic.
Okay. Let me go to Jeffrey here. We're winding up. We're running out of time. As is common with most dictatorships, they normally break down the old institutions, the judiciary, the legislature, security forces are controlled by one man. How do you see things working out? Should there be a change with all these institutions down?
That's a very interesting question. And I think, you know, the traditional pillars of support that have been upholding the Jammeh regime, like many dictatorships across the world, not only on the African continent, you have to look at the security forces, of course, the judiciary, which we've talked about, and these government institutions that prop up repression. And I think the key issue here, again, going back to the security forces, we've heard reports that, you know, leaders who have been involved in massacres in the past and people that are part of the security forces have actually refused orders this time around to open fire on protesters, which I think is highly significant. I think Jammeh, as Dr. Jammeh alluded to, is increasingly unpopular, even within those traditional pillars of support. Mm-hmm. That's something we have not seen in the past, at least publicly, you know, actually people defying the president, not only in terms of people going out to the streets every single day for the past several weeks, but also refusing to abide by his orders. I think that's very significant. And going again back to the attention of the international community, I think this is incredibly important, and a main reason why I think we're seeing some restraint this time around. I think this represents a momentous step forward. It's certainly no small achievement for our country and a democratic movement that has rarely received outside attention or support, despite taking on one of the world's most brazen and consistently violent human rights offenders, that being Yahya Jammeh and his government.
I see. We're running out of time, but Dr. Amadou, in one word, how do you see things working out in the next few days?
It's just 10 seconds. But the dictatorship would soon unravel.
I see. Well, we shall keep following the situation in the Gambia. But that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Jeffrey Smith, international consultant and executive director of the Vanguard Africa Movement, Dr. Amadou Scattered Jane, director of Coalition for Change Gambia, and Saine Marane, Gambian journalist based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Our producer was Jackson Mufunganyi, and our engineer tonight was Justin Twites. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. And a reminder that just in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm Douglas Simpuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.